We've been discussing how psychology is really divided into two large primary sectors. One is research psychology, and the other is psychotherapy. One, the research arm, the other, the application arm. And we've been considering a discussion between two psychologists, one a research psychologist and the other a clinical psychologist, which essentially does psychotherapy. And in that discussion, they seem to be agreeing with this point, the research psychologist saying that there are serious limitations to research psychology, and the clinical psychologist saying that research psychology really can't develop ideas big enough to be utilized in the clinical setting. And in so stating, seems to be admitting that the theories that he uses really aren't the product of research psychology and therefore really aren't scientific. Both of these psychologists are making a valid point. The clinical psychologist is correct in asserting that psychotherapy requires bigger answers than research psychology is supplying. And the research psychologist is correct in asserting that the bigger answers utilized by the clinical psychologist are unscientific. If psychotherapy requires a more global conception of human personality than research psychology can supply, where can such a macroscopic understanding of the human being be found? The answer is not found in the speculations of the originators of personality theory. Rather, the Bible provides the ultimate personality theory, the ultimate basis for psychotherapy, if you will, for helping the person with his behavioral, relational, and emotional problems. And as we utilize the teachings of Scripture for our core, we can add the findings of research psychology, that is, at least the research psychology that's proved to be scientifically valid, to help us provide the peripheral information that Scripture does not address. And the good news is that research psychology dealing with these peripheral issues can do so effectively. The observations above lead us to the conclusion, then, that the field of psychology is comprised of two largely separate worlds, the world of research and the world of psychotherapy or application. Though there is some interaction between the research and the psychotherapeutic aspects of psychology, the range of overlap is relatively small. These segments of psychology are divided not only in their objectives, that is, learning versus application, but in the types of questions that they seek to answer, microscopic versus macroscopic, as well as in the methodologies utilized to answer those questions, scientific tools versus intuitive approaches, and the remedies they suggest, primarily physiological ones versus primarily talking cures. Because of this dichotomy, as reflected in the interchange described above between the research and clinical psychologists, it seems that at the practical level, each of these approaches appears not to view the other as comprising legitimate psychology. This is not to suggest that one would categorically deny the legitimacy of the work of the other. However, an underlying attitude prevails which conveys that, quote, my approach to psychology is real psychology and yours is not, end of quote. Therefore, the bottom line is that psychology consists of two major segments, research psychology, which is essentially scientific, or at least largely scientific in its approach, and psychotherapy, which is not. Consequently, in addressing the central issue of this course, how should a biblical counselor view psychology, it is evident that we cannot give the same answer for all of psychology, but must provide an independent response for research psychology and for psychotherapy. Failure to do so would be inaccurate and confusing. Despite this significant distinction between research psychology and psychotherapy, both secular and evangelical analysis often fail to recognize this distinction, and in doing so, fall prey to the inescapable inaccuracies and confusions that result. This failure to recognize these two worlds of psychology is seen, for example, in the way psychology is commonly defined. Most sources in defining psychology do so as if research psychology constitutes the totality of psychology and that psychotherapy does not exist. This tendency can be seen in the definition of psychology in the World Book. There we read, quote, psychology is the scientific study of mental processes and behavior. Psychologists observe and record how people and other animals relate to one another and to the environment. They look for patterns that will help them understand and predict behavior, and they use scientific methods to test their ideas. Through such studies, psychologists have learned much that can help people fulfill their potential as human beings and increase understanding between individuals, groups, nations, and cultures, end of quote. Just as an aside, notice the conclusion arrived at by the author of this definition, that psychology has been such a smashing success, and the things learned can help people fulfill their potential as human beings and increase understandings between individuals, groups, nations, and cultures. That's not true. I mean, psychology has really not done that. People today are not fulfilling their potential all the better because of psychology, and nations, cultures, and individuals really aren't getting along better, as seen in school shootings and many other indicators. So he's off on that count. But in addition to that, getting to our issue, this definition is problematic because it restricts its focus to research psychology. And this can be seen in three ways. First of all, in its statement of what psychology is, that is, quote, the scientific study of mental processes and behavior, close quote. This is what research psychology is, but personality theory goes far beyond mental processes and behavior to consider such factors as feelings, desires, motivations, etc. The second way in which this definition excludes psychotherapy is its assertion that psychology is a scientific enterprise. And as noted above, we really can't accurately describe the major therapeutic approaches as reflecting science. Therefore, this definition does not encompass psychotherapy. Third, this definition excludes psychotherapy in its description of what psychology does. It never really mentions psychotherapy. It nowhere mentions helping people with their problems. This omission is especially noteworthy since psychotherapy represents the primary application of psychology and constitutes a major segment of the field. One is left with the impression that psychotherapy is intentionally overlooked in this definition. This, in fact, may be the case, since many in the research segment of psychology seem to want to pretend that psychotherapy is not an aspect of psychology because of its lack of scientific credibility. It also seems that those writing textbooks and encyclopedia entries, such as the one above, frequently identify more closely with research psychology than with psychotherapy, research psychology tending to reside more in the academic environment that usually produces these types of resources. Therefore, it's not surprising that this author heavily leans toward research psychology in his definition and avoids psychotherapy with its personality theories. One can find similar definitions in college intro to psych textbooks. Consider, for example, a definition found in the textbook entitled Psychology, an unassuming name, published by Houghton Mifflin Company. And this appears to be a major psychological text for an intro to psychology course. And I quote from this book the definition of psychology. Quote, psychology is the science of behavior and mental processes. This means that psychologists conduct experiments and use other scientific methods to better understand the actions and thoughts of humans and animals, from the activity of a single nerve cell to the workings of memory to the social conflicts in a complex society. End of quote. This definition seems to dismiss psychotherapy even more unceremoniously than the one in the World Book. It connotes that psychology only conducts experiments, thus eliminating psychotherapy altogether. My concern with these definitions is not the apparent bias toward research psychology, but with the failure to recognize that psychotherapy exists and that it is different from research psychology. And I want to emphasize that these definitions are typical. If you look at a typical definition of psychology, usually it has this kind of bias toward research psychology and completely or almost completely eliminates psychotherapy. This omission is amazing in that psychotherapy is probably the largest and most visible aspect of psychology. If these definitions said something to the effect that the field of psychology included both research and psychotherapeutic application, at least this would be an acknowledgement that this very large and influential segment of psychology exists as a distinct entity from research psychology. One byproduct of this failure to include psychotherapy in the standard definition is the implication that psychology is a homogeneous field and that all psychology is scientific. This false impression is largely responsible for the confusion related to the topic of this course. Evangelicals would be better positioned to determine what aspects of psychology to use in the counseling process and which to exclude if they understood the distinction between research psychology and psychotherapy. But apparently they don't. This failure to recognize the existence of two distinctive categories within psychology and the distinction between the two is not only found in the definitions of psychology, but also in the content of books on the subject. For example, in texts of introduction to psychology courses, usually scant attention is given to psychotherapy and personality theories. Certainly it is not given space, these subjects are not given space commensurate with their presence in the field. Certainly, psychotherapy is a huge part of psychology, and yet frequently an intro to psychology textbook, it's given a very, very small segment. In reading these books and in taking most intro to psych courses in college, one is left with the same impression conveyed by the definitions above, that the field of psychology consists almost predominantly of research psychology. When psychotherapy is recognized, the student is often left with the impression that the personality theories utilized by psychotherapy flow out of the psychological research. Again, the problem is not with the bias toward research psychology, but with the resulting misunderstanding that it creates. If the authors of these texts acknowledge that psychotherapy constituted a very large and, for the most part, discrete segment of the field of psychology, and that it utilized theories that were not the outgrowth of research psychology, those taking the course would be left with a much clearer understanding of the field as it exists. Even in the book Psychology and Christianity, cited above, the various participants seem to be talking past each other a great deal of the time, primarily because each contributor was using the word psychology with his own definition in view, without acknowledging that the word meant something substantially different to the others in the debate. In reading the book, I was left with a distinct impression that the failure to acknowledge that research and psychotherapy represent different worlds was responsible for much, if not most, of the misunderstanding that seemed to characterize the discussion. The editors in their closing evaluation also recognized the centrality of this factor. This failure to distinguish between the essential nature of research psychology and psychotherapy represents the source of a great deal of misunderstanding and miscalculation related to psychology, both by the secular world and the evangelical community. One practical example has to do with the college freshman who chooses a psychology major because he wants to work with people and helping them resolve their problems. As he goes through his intro to psych course, this psychotherapeutic aspect of psychology is seldom mentioned. In other words, he's taking psychology, he's in the psychology major because he wants to be a psychotherapist. He wants to help people in the counseling setting. And he goes through his intro to psych course, and that aspect of psychology is almost completely missing. The result is that the student becomes confused and disillusioned. We see that the roots of this confusion are even deeper when we consider why this college freshman views psychology as synonymous with psychotherapy. In other words, why does this young man or young woman go into college assuming that if you take a psychology major, you're going to be studying psychotherapy? He does so because the equation of psychology with psychotherapy represents the predominant perspective of the general public. This is because when the individual in the general public interacts with psychology, it's usually in a therapeutic setting. The man on the street has little or no interaction with research psychology, unless he happens to have a research psychologist as a friend or neighbor, or if he works in a university setting. Likewise, if an individual reads a book related to psychology, unless he is a university student, the book that he selects will probably be written by a psychotherapist and deal with psychology from a psychotherapeutic perspective. Therefore, in the eyes of the general public, psychology is predominantly psychotherapy. It's predominantly application. This is not to suggest that people in our society are unaware of research psychology. The point is, however, that when they think of psychology, it is the psychotherapeutic segment of this field that looms large in their mind. Now, this is an interesting issue. When World Book and other sources define psychology, when Intro to Psych books define psychology, they do so from an almost strictly research psychology perspective, while the man on the street, when he hears the word psychology, when he thinks about psychology, it's almost entirely from a psychotherapeutic perspective. So each of these two segments of our society in dealing with the topic of psychology, they each have a totally different image in mind. And that certainly is a tremendous cause of a lot of confusion. Because in the popular perception, psychology is psychotherapy. Most people, when they hear psychology defined emphatically as a science, they consequently assume that that which transpires in the psychotherapist's office and that which is printed in self-help books is scientifically, when in fact, this is not the case. This misconception is carried over into equating psychotherapy as professional help on the same level that treatment by a medical doctor constitutes professional help. This is not to suggest that psychologists are not professionals in their field. Becoming a psychologist requires a great deal of education and other work. The fact, however, is that because they base their work on personality theory, they do lack the scientific foundation of the medical profession. This is not to suggest that medicine is totally scientific and that psychotherapy is totally unscientific. However, the reality is that psychotherapy is far less scientific than the medical profession. Therefore, when people confuse the scientific rigor of medicine with psychotherapy, they come away with a false perspective regarding the scientific nature of psychotherapy. Gary L. Almy, in his book, How Christian is Christian Counseling, equates personality theory, or to use his term, counseling psychology, with evolutionary biology, in the sense that both represent macroscopic theories that cannot be validated scientifically. Almy observes regarding the research methodologies utilized in both fields, quote, such methods diverge from rigorous, objective, provable/verifiable science, whether we are considering fossilized remains or the memories of a counseling client, end quote. Almy goes on to note that, quote, the observable data supposedly supporting both evolution and psychology are not measurable phenomena, but are entirely descriptive and subjective. The hypotheses are biased toward an expected and desired outcome. There are no experiments capable of proving or disproving such hypotheses. There can be neither independent confirmation nor replication of such theories. Neither evolutionary biology nor psychoanalysis/counseling psychology are truly scientific, nor are they capable of generating truth. This should be obvious to anyone who attempts a dispassionate examination of the issue. For instance, repression, the very centerpiece of Freud's theory of the mind, is an idea for which there is no scientific evidence. This is increasingly obvious after 60 years of research on the subject, end quote. The danger caused by the misconception regarding the scientific validity of psychotherapy is substantial. People submit themselves or their loved ones to the services of psychotherapists with the confidence that the treatment they receive is rooted in science. This sort of misplaced trust can make them vulnerable to substantial pain and harm. The same is true of those who read and follow psychological self-help books as if their contents represent scientific validity. This can result in the reader ordering his life in ways that are counterproductive and even dangerous. This misplaced trust is especially dangerous because it involves some of the most sensitive areas of life, our values, attitudes, behaviors, emotions, and relationships. It is bad enough if someone gives us erroneous advice regarding an issue such as building a house. We may pay dearly, but we can always get it fixed. However, if someone gives us bad advice regarding how to deal with our emotions or input that hurts our marriage, the damage may be irreparable. Or, to use an analogy, we need to be far more cautious about selecting a brain surgeon than a barber. Likewise, the deeper someone delves into our inner person, the more cautious we must be. Perhaps one of the most flagrant examples of the damage that can be done by this misplaced trust and personality theory is found in the recovered memory therapy. This approach to therapy, built upon the Freudian concept of repression mentioned by Almy above, asserts that the individual does not recall events in one's past that are extremely dramatic, but rather these events must be accessed through psychotherapy. This approach to psychotherapy has led to multitudes of clients, quote, remembering, unquote, during the counseling process, sinful and criminal acts perpetrated upon them in their childhood. Often these, quote, memories, end quote, implicate family members and others in rape, satanic ritual abuse, and even murder. These accusations, in turn, have led to charges against family members, daycare workers, religious leaders, and others who have had occasion to be in contact with children. Such charges have resulted in many cases of ruined reputations and even jail sentences. Often families have been destroyed. This type of therapy also has a devastating impact on the client. For example, once clients subject themselves to this type of therapy, suicide attempts among this population increase by 500%. Self-mutilation increases by more than 100%, and unemployment increases by 700%. Nor does therapy seem to help. In one study, not a single patient was well after 3 years of intense therapy. The real tragedy regarding this type of psychotherapy is that after years of such devastation, substantial evidence suggests that it is all a hoax, that the memories, rather than representing actual events, were merely the product of psychological suggestion. Since the client had not previously remembered these incidents, their credibility rests solely on the confidence of the public in psychotherapy. Public confidence in regard to this type of psychotherapy is now beginning to erode in the face of research. One very condemning fact is the evidence that children do not repress memories of horrific events. For example, children who have witnessed the murder of their parents or who have been kidnapped have vivid recollections of these instances. Likewise, those who went through the Holocaust as children still remember the tragic events of those days, even decades after the fact. So these violent, terrible memories have not been repressed. It is of special interest to us that while recovered memory syndrome has to a great extent fallen into disrepute in the secular world, it is still in vogue within the evangelical community, indicating that evangelicals may be more influenced by psychology than even the secular world. A deeper concern is that if evangelicals fall prey to the flagrant abuses of the recovered memory syndrome, how much less likely are they to identify and see as error the more subtle problems with the standard personality theories used by psychotherapy. Nonetheless, these more subtle errors can also be very devastating, and therefore it's important that the evangelical community become aware of the unscientific nature of personality theories. Evangelicals are especially positioned to be hurt by this confusion between the nature of research psychology and psychotherapy because the evangelical community has been influenced substantially more deeply and profoundly by psychotherapeutic ideas than by the findings of research psychology. The psychological insights that evangelicals hear on Christian radio, both by psychologists and by pastors who have adopted psychological concepts, find their source almost exclusively in personality theory. Likewise, the psychological concepts embedded in evangelical publications are practically all psychotherapeutic in nature, coming, that is, from personality theories. And even more significant, the psychological concepts that have found their way into the evangelical worldview are virtually all borrowed from personality theory. For example, the concept of self-esteem. Evangelicals have embraced these ideas with the confidence that psychology means science, and therefore that these ideas have scientific validity. Since all truth is God's truth, they have concluded that these concepts can be adopted with confidence. Because they are unaware of the dichotomy inherent in psychology, they do not realize that their confidence is misplaced. Because of this false confidence, they assume that these ideas must be compatible with Scripture and therefore are content when a superficial cliche is used to support that fact, to demonstrate that these ideas that come from personality theories are in fact compatible with the Bible. In light of the degree to which the evangelical community has bought into psychotherapeutic ideas, the ideas that flow out of personality theories, in seeking to understand how a biblical counselor should view psychology, we must recognize this distinction between research psychology and personality theories and treat each of these two aspects of psychology separately. In other words, we can't just ask how should a Christian view psychology, but we must ask how should a Christian view research psychology? How should a Christian view psychotherapy and the ideas related to that, the ideas that find their source in personality? In the next lesson, we will describe the three most dominant personality theories and examine their validity. This is the end of 5.